Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us. And as always, I say it every week. And you know, I actually mean it every week too. Got a great show planned for you. You know, and unfortunately, I'm sure there are some that aren't great. You know, maybe you're sitting there going, I think that I always like to envision that I've got a couple people out there that like to listen to the show because they hate me. You know what I mean? Like it's like the highlight of their week. You know, they're like throwing things at the radio. They're like, get this schmuck off the air. Anyway, but we're back. Well, the saving grace, of course, is Darren. You're the glue that holds it together, man. But anyway, we actually do have a great show for you today. One of our favorite guests is coming back. He's going to join us about halfway through the show. And I want to throw this out there. We're going to have something at the end of the show about it. So I'll remind you. But we're most likely going to run over on the interview today. And if we cut you off early, which I think we probably will, you can always go to the podcast page. You can just Stitcher actually has a good podcast page for us. There's tons of them out there. We can go to mynorthwest.com. Just Google Know Your Risk Radio. You can go to knowyourriskradio.com. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can go to iTunes. It's all over the place. So you can hear it. But one of my favorite guests, Bill Fleckenstein, brilliant guy, great money manager, track record. You know, I feel very privileged to be able to get to talk to him. He's agreed to come on today, and we're going to get a little Fed update because there are a lot of market updates. Again, you know, you're hearing this show on Saturday. We're recording on Friday. It has actually been an interesting week. And let me tell you the things that we're focused on. First and foremost, if you heard the show before today, and hopefully you've heard it lots of times, right? But was it 3 weeks ago? I think it was the show that aired on March 1st, where we did our whole rant on Boeing. I did like a 20-minute segment on Boeing. And again, just because I don't want the hate mail, right? We love Boeing. Love the people that work there. We have employees that have family that works there. I have families that have worked there and do work there still. Love the company. Love the product. This is not a hit job on Boeing. Okay. But what we've seen since we aired that segment, I think Boeing stock price was at $4.46 today. Last I checked, I think we're at $3.60 something. Actually had a client leave our firm because we sold his Boeing stock at $400. And I did follow up with an email I couldn't help myself. Just, hey, you still mad at me for making you sell Boeing? I haven't heard back from him, of course. I can't help it. He's actually a really nice guy, good guy. I just couldn't help myself. Anyway, yeah, we're at 365 on Boeing today. And some news came out yesterday on Boeing. And we're doing the market update right now. I'm just jumping straight into it because we got a lot to discuss. The bad news just keeps coming out, okay? And one of the things that came out yesterday, in addition to, you know, it's been a deluge. And I want to make it very clear. I personally don't think that there's something systemically wrong with their airplanes. It's looking increasingly like they rushed it to market, and didn't work out some bugs. But that goes right into our narrative. This goes into right what we were talking about and our concerns with the company. First, it was a valuation basis. The stocks, you know, the company's revenue's up something like 6.5% over the last 3.5 years. And during the same period of time, the stock's tripled. Okay. Long-term average on the stock is 16. The PE ratio of 16, it got up to a 24, 25. Okay, that's just so expensive for so many different reasons. There's other valuation metrics that are way more obscene than that on Boeing. But it's just, this is what happens when stocks get priced to perfection. This is why we are value guys. Okay. That is a perfect example. It's not a knock on the company. We're not saying we don't like its long-term chances. We're saying that as an investment at this price, losing money is almost a guaranteed loss over a long enough time period. Going back to Warren Buffett's words, there are no bad assets, there are just bad prices. Meaning that if we pay a good price and we pay the right price for any asset, it can be a phenomenal investment. And people get so hung up on, well, it's such a good company. Look, if you pay a ridiculously high stock price for the best company in the world, you're going to lose money. Okay, it's the way it works over a long enough time period. And it won't be a solid investment. And so that's really what we are conveying. And since we aired that show, like I said, the stocks got pounded. And not for reasons that we're happy about. No one celebrates, you know, something bad like this happening. We're not wishing the worst for Boeing. The exact opposite. We can't touch the stock because it's obscenely valued, but we're actually hoping that they turn things around. We actually hope that they get their focus back on, you know, where I believe it should be. I think that they've been too myopically focused on cost cutting and profit and $800 a share. And these are the kind of things that happen. Right? Nobody listens to guys like me when stocks are just going vertical. But value investing works because of this. Right, this nothing works perfectly all the time. And when you got a stock priced to perfection, these kind of things are going to happen. So then one of the big staples of that overvaluation, one of the things that the bulls were relying on and even brought up after the crash has happened was the backlog, right? Oh, they got all these jets in backlog. Well, there's a company that came out today, was it in Singapore, I want to say, that canceled $6 billion worth of orders for Boeing planes. Okay, now that's not a big enough hit to the stock. The backlog is, I want to say, something like $600 billion, or maybe it's even a little higher than that. But this is my point, right? This is the point we were trying to make. Just like in personal lives, bad things happen, and that's why we've got to be disciplined about prices we pay and our expectations for performance. And look, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not saying Boeing's going to 200. I mean, I personally believe that it'll probably end up somewhere between 200 to 250 because I think that makes sense on a valuation basis. Could go lower. I'm not trying to make a call. I don't have a crystal ball. What I'm trying to do is illustrate the importance of focusing on value and keeping your eyes on the ball. And you know, I just... Look, I hope I'm wrong. Like I said, I love it. It's a local company. No ill will. But when you hear these kind of stories over and over and over again, it was like I was saying on our Twitter feed, and you could follow me at KYR Radio on Twitter. You can't serve two masters. Okay, if all I'm hearing when I talk to senior executives from Boeing, and we did 5 or 6 different interviews, when all I'm hearing is $800 a share, $800 a share, cost cutting, we're not worried about costs, we're deferring amount of view. When I hear all that, I know that I got a management team that isn't focused on the underlying business. They're focused on the stock price. And some investors go, well, that's what I want them focused on. No, you don't. You want them focused on running their business, because if they do it competently and they do it correctly, the share price will take care of itself. It's like my college football coach, Frosty Westering, always used to tell us over and over and over. I don't want to hear about the outcome of the game, guys. I don't even want to talk about the other team. The only thing that impacts our results is our input, what we do. Right? We focus on the things we can control. Everything else is a waste of time. Now, do I want the management to want the stock to go higher? Of course. But just do the right things, and then I'll take care of itself. And like I said, it's one of those things where you don't want to be right. But all the other subsequent news, like the canceling of the backlog, it's just kind of leaking out, right? It's just kind of this stream of bad news is just kind of leaking out now. Now there's questions about the involvement with the FAA and all this kind of stuff. And what does it all circle back to? It's all circling back to rushing it, skipping some steps, looking past some details, right? And that goes in perfectly with what we were talking about. Right, being too myopically focused on the bottom line. And that sounds crazy for an investment guy like me to say, but this is why. Right, we can't just think about stocks as these, you know, ethereal things that are just floating out there in the world of finance. These are companies. And as shareholders, we're part owners in companies. And what we never want to do is cut the head off the golden goose. Right? It's like the Hippocratic oath of investing. Do no harm. As a manager, that is your number one job. As a CEO of a company, that's your number one job, is to take care of shareholder assets. And in our opinion, which we've been wrong plenty of times, but in our opinion, it bears all the warning signs of management focused on the wrong things. And this is what happens. It doesn't usually happen, you know, a week after you say it on the radio. The timing of it's a bit lucky. But this kind of gives you an illustration of the way that we look at things and the way that you should look at things. This is the difference between somebody chasing stocks and being an investor, being an equity owner. And we have to pay attention. Because I don't think it's over with Boeing, guys. Again, the price of this stock is still nosebleed level, especially for the type of company it is and the rate it's growing revenues. And it's a good company. I'm not saying that. I just think that they've gotten off track. I think they got carried away. And that's what I said in the March 1st show before any of this stuff came up. And we took a lot of heat for it, which is fine. I got no problem being a lightning rod. But anyway, so there's a lot of other stuff to get to. But I just want to start off with Boeing and just say, look, when you get that much good news priced into a stock, I mean, this is what happens. So anyway, rest of the market, this incessant grind higher based on nothing continued. And one of the reasons we're having Bill Fleckenstein on, if you heard the first interview, he's not the biggest fan of the Federal Reserve. Neither am I. And that's not taking shots at the guys in the Fed. I think and the ladies on the Fed, I think they're a lot of brilliant people. I just don't like the role that they are playing in our economy at the moment or over the last decade. And I don't, you know, truthfully, I don't even think it's their fault. I think the majority of it is the fault of the politicians, because I think that they are way more influenced by political pressure than we're led to believe. And they just want to keep this train on the tracks. And the problem with this is we've gotten balance sheets so out of whack and valuations so ridiculously high that if they, you know, if they normalized and went back to normal and let rates do their things and just kind of backed out of markets and kept running off their balance sheet, the whole thing had come apart. And I think that's something investors don't realize, is that in a way, and this isn't new, but the magnitude of it is, I don't think investors realize they see markets going up and they think that that's like a direct proxy for the economy, or it's a thermometer on the economy saying everything's rolling along great. And that's just not the case. And they've kind of painted themselves in a corner, because if they do raise rates, if they let rates float, right, and they get that balance sheet, you know, normalized, they burn off another, you know, billion or trillion and a half or $2 trillion worth of the bonds that they've soaked up over the last 10 years, the whole thing can come apart. Same with European Central Bank. And therein lies the problem is, OK, you can do this. You can get in there. You can give a boost to an economy and a stock market. But how do you get out? Right. We refer to it as an economic roach motel. You can, you know, it's like the Hotel California of economics, right? You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. And that's one of the problems, because the market, the capital markets, the lending markets, they all become dependent on it. And you saw that just in the little bit of rate hikes we had there, you know, over the last, since 2017, right? New home sales were down something like 19% last year. Why? It's not because the economy was falling apart. It was because rates went up. And everybody goes, yeah, but they only went up. You know, I remember I bought it, my first house with rates. Look, it doesn't matter what the level of rates are. What matters is the change, or the delta, right? The pace of the change. And the bottom line is, if you were getting money at 3.25 on a 30-year loan, and now you're getting money at 5 on a 30-year loan, you know, what is that? What is that? A 60% increase? Something like that? 40, 50% increase on the interest expense? No, it's more than 1.5. Yeah, so you're at 60%, 65% increase on the interest rate expense. You know, so before at 3.25, you might have been able to own buy a $500,000 house based on the monthly payment. Now it's, you know, 425, 430. Right? So these are the problems that are going to keep coming up, and the Fed's not backing off. That's one of the reasons we wanted to get Bill on. This week they come out and they're preaching economic strength. Which, look, the economy is still faring pretty well, especially considering what's going on in the world. There's no question that the United States is holding up better than the rest of the world. But at the same time, the economic numbers are moving in the wrong direction. This whole run-up is just based on smoke, just based on Fed. And you saw Nike last night with a lackluster. There's another stock price to perfection. Great company. Lackluster earnings report. Their stock's getting pounded today. Dow's been down as much as 450 points. Like I said, guys, I mean, we could run to new all-time highs, but I've been saying it through this whole run-up. We're not out of the woods because all the economic data is moving in the wrong direction. We'll get into more of that with Bill. He's an expert on these things, and that's one of the reasons we're excited to have him on today. So that's going to be the real gist of it. We're going to get into a couple things like gold and volatility in the next segment, and then we're going to go to the interview with Bill Fleckenstein. So as always, you guys, if you are interested in the way that we look at things, if you're wondering what our bond replacement strategy that we're using that's been outperforming bonds by a magnitude of 2.5 to 3 times over the last several years, that is safer than bonds and costs less than bonds, if you want somebody that's focused on value and isn't just telling you to ride it up and ride it down and collecting their fees on your account, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can schedule a phone consultation. You can schedule a meeting. You can request our new booklet. You can go to the radio show website, Know Your Risk Radio. You can go to bulwarkmanagement.com. We're not hard to find. You guys know the drill. We got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. Brian does have a few classes coming up this month. Seats are limited, so sign up now at 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book, too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, we are back. Hey, I forgot our tagline, Darren. Just to remind you, this is the most scintillating hour of finance radio. Tongue very much in cheek there. But anyway, this is kind of an extended market update segment here because we've got more stuff to talk about. We keep talking about economic erosion. I want to make it very clear again, like I said in the opening segment, on a comparative basis, the United States is performing well right now. Okay, there's no question. What we are seeing, though, is we are seeing significant signs of slowing. Nothing is at alarm bells levels yet. Why that concerns us is you've got a stock market that's never been higher, that more highly valued. Okay, so and the economic underpinnings are not backing that up. And I think Nike is a perfect example of that announcing last night. I think you're going to see that. We've seen a lot of negative earnings revisions. And it's just, you just have a market price to perfection. You've got a global economic environment that is anything but. We got PMI and ISM numbers in, which basically, guys, are measures of manufacturing output. Okay, we've covered this extensively before. But basically, it's giving you an idea of the manufacturing output and the expected manufacturing output and all that kind of stuff. Again, not in contraction, but they have pulled back substantially. And we really like to look at those numbers because there's not a lot of noise. You can have a lot of movements from month to month, but they are reliable economic indicators. For instance, I think with the PMIs anyway, I believe that I don't think that they've ever dropped to 46 because 50 is zero growth. If you have a PMI of 50, that means you're not shrinking, but you're not growing the economy. And anything below 50 means that it's contracting. And I think every single time, if I remember correctly, the PMIs hit 46, we've had a recession. They got as low as 47.5, I want to say, in early 2016. So again, it's not alarm bell levels, but what it is saying is, yes, this market's gotten way out ahead of itself on a valuation basis. And like I said, you're seeing it in Nike, you're seeing it in Boeing, you're starting to see it, right? And those aren't even the two worst offenders, right? There's a lot of other worse stuff out there. The other thing that we're looking at is gold. Gold continues. We had a little bounce back there. It looked like it was going to go back down to the mat. We've seen a bounce back here. And interesting, again, it's moving with the dollar, not against it, which to me, again, is a sign of some financial duress out there. Bond spreads aren't showing it yet. The difference between, you know, treasuries and corporates, that's not blowing out yet. That's another recessionary signal that we keep an eye on. So like I said, I don't want to be an alarmist at all, but we're going to stick consistently to what we've been saying for the last 3.5 months during this whole insane run up based on nothing. That be careful, you guys. It's not to infinity and beyond. This is not a Buzz Lightyear stock market. Not anymore. There's too many wins out there. Now, could this economic slowdown prove to be transitory and see things pick up again? Yeah, it's possible. Certainly possible. You know, you do this business long enough and you learn to sit there and go, hey, anything's possible. Want to also get back to a classic, an oldie but a goodie on the show here, Tesla. Can you whistle on the radio? Can you do that? Yeah. I've never whistled on the show before. I bet the people listening love it when they get these side notes, you know, like it's my inner monologue, right? What a dumpster fire. I have never seen a management pull so many crazy Ivans. There's a Hunt for Red October reference for people. But just zigzagging all over the place. Look, if you want to know what a company looks like when they're under financial duress, watch Tesla. Okay, now they're going to tell you they're not under financial duress. The vast majority of their shareholders don't think they're under financial duress. I mean, we got to take that with a big grain of salt because I don't think the majority of their shareholders know what a balance sheet is, let alone how to read one. But you know, they're launching the Y, you know, the new Model Y. They're closing down their retail shops that they said was basically at the core of their strategy. Then they said they're keeping them open. This all happened over a 3-day period of time. It's just bizarre. It's just a bizarre deal. Now, the one caveat I will say about Tesla, there's a lot of Tesla bears out there. I'm not prepared to say it's an out-and-out fraud yet, and I don't want the Tesla bears to get mad at me for saying because I think that this could be just incompetence. Now, there's no question the CEO, Elon Musk, is fast and loose with the rules and fast and loose with the truth. There's no question about that. I mean, we know that he's lied multiple times. What I don't know is if it was fraudulent. I don't know that he was trying to deceive because I think the guy's a bit impetuous. I think he just kind of flies off at the handle. He's a spoiled billionaire that's used to everybody telling him how great he is. And I think it might just be an impetuous issue, right? Just he can't help himself. But I also wouldn't be surprised if it's a fraud because the financials just don't make any sense. Love the cars? Well, not the Model 3. I'm not a fan, but Model S, I mean, it's just gorgeous. Unbelievable. But again, right? The car is not the investment, right? The company is. And we got to separate emotion from that. So that one, we're approaching that 250 level on that stock, which has been big support for it. So, you know, we're not there yet, but I wouldn't put anybody's money into Tesla. We traded it once for we held it for like 3 or 4 days, had stop losses on it just in case because we saw a trading opportunity and made a quick 8% on the stock or something like that. But other than that, I mean, just the valuation on that one's nuts too. So anyway, we got to get rolling. We got our interview with Bill Fleckenstein coming up. So stick with us. You don't want to miss it. I mean, not many brighter minds in the world of finance, and I have a feeling he's going to have some very pointed comments for our friends at the Federal Reserve, and that's always a good time. So anyway, as always, guys, go to the website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. It's good when you know your own company's website. Check us out. If you want a consultation, we can do it over the phone. We can do it over email. Like I said, it's not a high-pressure thing. Just give us a call. We'll review what you're doing, compare it to how we do things, show you how we can lower your fees, give you more upside potential in the market, and also drastically reduce your risk. It's all about risk management. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Get our free booklet as well. Sign up for the newsletter. Anyway, 866-779-RISK. And hopefully you'll call us soon. We got to run, but we'll be right back with Bill Fleckenstein. So stay tuned. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with my financial advisor, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, what I love about you guys is your focus on risk management.
Well, Dory, we're a fiduciary and a holistic retirement planning firm. Our goals are simple. Get our clients the highest returns with the least amount of risk and cost.
I know they're normally used for safety, but how risky are bonds right now?
If a significant portion of your retirement portfolio is in cash or bonds, that just doesn't work in this low interest rate environment on the verge of inflation. You need a bond replacement strategy.
I gotta tell you, you have to read it. Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn that bond replacement strategy, learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. And without further ado, we got our special guest with us today, Mr. Bill Fleckenstein of Fleckenstein Capital. Bill, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, so we wanted to have you on the show. You know, I know your good buddies at the Federal Reserve had an interesting meeting today, this week. And wanted just to get an update of the conversation that we had in December and then also get your thoughts on the Fed. And I just thought, who better to discuss the Fed with than you? Obviously, no big surprises this week from the Fed, but I just think the double talk and talking out of both sides of their mouth continues to blow my mind. What were your thoughts on the Fed? Give us an update of where you're at with these guys, what you thought about the minutes, the reversal, the whole shot. Just kind of give us a summation of your take on that whole thing.
Well, it's rather remarkable that they have decided to end QT and stop the rate hikes while at the same time pretending that the policies that they pursue are efficacious and are the kinds of things that you can do and then undo. As we've seen with in Japan and in Europe, the central banks there couldn't even start to move away from negative interest rates. And while the Fed was able to raise rates a handful of times to the 2% level, plus or minus, they haven't been able to really, you know, finish QT. And the point is that the idea of taking rates to zero and trying to force the economy to do something does not work. It creates rising prices, though not always the ones that they want to go higher, and it creates misallocation, misallocated capital. But no one seems to mind until the problems start to hit. And so it's an exercise in can kicking in that it allows you to ignore long-running, long-tailed liability problems and things like that. So in essence, they had to them sort of walking away from the idea of rate hikes and stopping QT early is an admission that what they did, you know, didn't really work because it wasn't able to be walked away from. People don't really see it that way, and the Fed and other central banks keep claiming they want inflation. Why they think anyone wants to pay more for goods and services is beyond my comprehension. They talk about inflation when they mean real growth, just like they talk about deflation when they mean they're worried about a nasty recession or a depression. They can't even articulate the points that they really want. When we gain some perspective on this, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road, they'll look back at this 20 or 25 year period of central banks, you know, actively trying to promote inflation as complete lunacy. The policies don't work, and then they cause bigger problems, and they come back and do it again. And this is the third bubble in the last 25 years. And is it starting to unwind? They're panicked and they've stopped this. And the next thing you know, when the market gets weak enough and the economy weakens enough, or both, or some combination of the two, they'll cut rates again. And one of these days, people are going to get fed up. I don't know when that's going to be, but we'll have to. But that will happen at some point.
Yeah, that was one of the next things I was going to ask you, because one of the things that has been incredibly frustrating and surprising to me is how the market still isn't bucking any of this. I, you know, obviously it's good for rising asset prices, and most market participants, that's all they care about. But at some point, you would think that markets would start discounting this and saying, look, these guys don't know what they're doing. This isn't working. This doesn't look good.
Yeah, but you have to understand the so-called markets are populated with people who've never seen anything but irresponsible policy. And if you've been in the investment business for 20 years now, which is a reasonably decent long time, well, let's say 17, you've seen one bad period, 08, and you think it was just kind of a mistake. It just was a once in a lifetime thing. And you don't, if you knew what really happened, that would have hampered you in trying to gather assets and make money in this, in the couple of manias we've had. So the markets seem to be populated by people who love these sorts of things, love these policies, and until the negative consequences show up or people start to think about them more, they get away with them. That's why these things go on for so long, and then they go on long enough that it seems like, well, they must be really good policies because nothing quote-unquote bad has happened. It's just sort of the nature of the madness of crowds. There aren't really acceptable answers. People want to know, well, exactly why did this happen and when will it end? And it's not possible to know that. Crowd psychology is, you know, is not predictable. I mean, you can start to react when you see it, when you think you see it changing. You can't predict in advance what will cause it to change or when it will change.
Yeah. We had Dave Collum. I don't know if you know Dave. He's a professor at Cornell. Are you familiar with Dave Collum?
Yeah, he's a reader of my column.
Okay, got it. Okay, yeah, well, there you go. Anyway, we had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and we were having a good laugh about this whole, you know it well, the whole Fed line. You know, the problem with bubbles is nobody can see it coming. And we discussed this with you the last time you were on the show, and I think about you and some other guys that I know. Nobody can see these things coming. Your book came out, was it January 13th, 2008? right as it was starting to, you can't ever see bubbles. That's the problem. That's the danger of it. And I look around right now and I go, listen, we just came off the 10 years, the worst growth, slowest growth pace in 10 years. And we've got asset prices across the board at record valuations. That looks like a bubble to me. It looks like a bubble reminiscent of the real estate market. I mean, it's obviously further, it's metastasized further into the economy now. But where did this whole line about not being able to see a bubble come from? I mean, I know, yeah, obviously, you know, you've got the published work that proves that you saw it. I saw it, not to the same degree that you guys did. I didn't get the bank connection and you know how systemic the issue was. But there are tons of people that say, where did this whole logic come from? We can't spot bubbles. Hey, when did that start?
No idea. I think it's the way for the Fed to give itself an out. If they admitted to being able to see it, then they'd have to admit to the fact there was one. And then they'd have to start examining how did it occur. And they'd have to be a little bit introspective. And that would point the finger back at them. And I don't think they're very keen to have to go down that path.
So when we look at this, I don't know what your take on it is. I mean, I sense a bit of, you know, you being a bit apoplectic or, you know, frustrated or something like that, you know, to that tune with the Fed. Is there a break point where this has to stop? I mean, are they in for a penny, in for a pound now, right? Did they enter the game to such a large level where they're just not going to leave?
No, I mean, the Fed has been all in on this for some time.
Right.
There's no chance of them waking up someday and starting to behave responsibly. The markets are going to have to force that on them. Some event is going to have to occur to force them into examining their policy's role in all the misallocated capital and all the social divide that has come about because the middle class has been crushed and there's a big bifurcation of wealth, and all these things are partially to be blamed on the policies that they've pursued. I don't believe they're ever going to conclude that they had a role in all of these things. They see themselves as the savior for the problems rather than the cause of them. They are the cause of them, but I don't think they're ever going to conclude that.
Well, and then my fear is that it's, you know, it's kind of that reflexive nature, right? I mean, the longer they're involved, you know, they've been involved so long, like you've said, there is a bit of truth to the fact that they can't get uninvolved now, because if they do, the whole thing would come apart, right? I mean, they've sort of created the need for themselves to maintain their role in markets and keep supporting markets, because, you know, obviously I would love to have a free, you know, a system where they weren't involved, markets where they weren't involved and messing with everything all the time. At the same time, I don't think that there's the political will to swallow it. I don't think that, it doesn't look like to me like anybody benefits from it, especially on the political side. And we were sitting there listening to Powell coming out and saying, you know, everything's great in the economy, but we're going to stop QT and we're going to keep rate hikes. And I'm sitting there, we're going to freeze out rate hikes for the year. And I'm sitting there going, wait a second, man, you just said two completely oppositional things. Which one is true? I for the life of me, I can't understand what these people are doing. You're probably tired of talking about the Fed. anyway, hey, update on Apple. Last time we talked to you, you had your short on Apple. Didn't you short it right around 225, something right there, right around the top?
Yeah, I think by the time we talked, I think I probably had covered it.
Gotcha.
I don't remember exactly when we spoke, but I covered it on the big break that it had. And I'm not short at the moment. I might get shorted soon, but, you know, the rally has been, the rally from December, Christmas Eve, has been pretty ferocious, and nothing has, has been... no news has really taken any stocks down. So there hasn't really been much of a point in it. I was short a little Micron, or I owned some puts on Micron. They had a horrible quarter that was fairly predictable, and their business is not going to get better. And the stock was up 10% yesterday. So it hasn't been an environment where it's been worth shorting, with the exception maybe of Tesla and a few other things. But, I think that's going to change, but, I'm not involved in Apple at the moment. I might be sometime soon, but
Yeah, this run up, we were looking at that. I was actually going over with our analyst yesterday, and just this run, and you know, they're not the only thing that's run up. You've just seen this incessant bid under the market, and I've been scratching my head the whole time because I watching the economic data come in, ISM and PMIs, they're still in growth territory, but they've pulled back significantly. And just looking at this rally off Christmas, or you know, the day after Christmas on the 26th, and it's just been breathtaking. What is your take? We've been watching this. We've been talking about it every week and saying, look, we're not convinced that this is not just a bear market rally. What is your read on where we're at? Do you think this is a bear market rally?
Where we're at in what?
In markets. So looking at the S&P 500, looking at the Dow, are you buying this? Do you think this, obviously, I know your thoughts on the overall economy and valuations and things of that nature, but do you see this as being a bear market rally, or do you think this is a head fake and we're in for a tough, a bumpy ride?
I believe it's a bear market rally. The bear market has been caused by the ending of QE and the starting of QT, and it took a while to hit in America. It hit around the world first. And so then we had a nasty break, and now there's been a big relief rally, fairly common. Same thing happened in 2000. Something similar happened in 2007. So I think it's just a rally in a bear market. It's been a very big rally. It's been very powerful, very convincing. But the reason the market went down, in my opinion, is because of QT. And even though they're slowing QT and they will end it in September, that is the promise to do that is not the same as opening the spigots again. And so everyone who thinks that the Fed has capitulated, which they have, but what they've done is not the kind of thing that is going to be able to drive the market higher. So I think when this rally is over with, maybe it's over with now, the market's going to go back to declining until the Fed rides to the rescue with not only no QT, but more QE. And then we have to see, you know, how does the dollar respond? How does the bond market respond? How does the equity market respond? I'm sure Pavlovian fashion will go back up.
Right.
We have to see how people view the next round of QE. And while by having to do it again, it shows that the prior three didn't work. If people lose confidence, that'll be a big deal. But we can't say that they will until we get there.
Right. Yeah, I've got Fed exhaustion. I just, you know, I guess miss the old days. Okay, so a little more local story here. I think we did a show on March 1st. Took a lot of flack for it. Actually, most flack we'd ever taken about a subject. But we'd been looking into Boeing for a long time just because I was, you know, just the meteoric rise of its stock. I think that was probably the first thing that caught our eye. And we actually started looking at it, sizing it up as a short opportunity about a month ago. Timing was, well, it's, you know, you're never cheering for bad things to happen like plane crashes, obviously. You don't want to be right that way. But we were looking at it on a valuation basis. We did a show on it. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was I wanted to get your thoughts on Boeing. We were looking at it. We conducted about five or six different interviews with senior executives there and really did our homework. And we just thought that they were placing way too big of an impetus on cost cutting. According to senior accounting executives at the firm, it wasn't so much cost cutting. It was cost deferments. That big backlog that everybody was touting. The accounting executive was explaining to me that the vast majority of that backlog is priced at levels where if they were to deliver the airplanes today, they'd do it at a loss because management's betting on the come. They're betting they can continue to cut costs and cut their way to profitability on those future orders. Then, of course, the tragedy with the planes going down happened, and we kind of know the rest of the narrative. What are your thoughts on Boeing? On a fundamental basis, do you look at it? Any opinion on that one whatsoever?
No, not really.
Okay. Well,
I've not been involved, and all things being equal, I think Boeing is a pretty good company.
Right.
And, I imagine they'll figure out what they did wrong. And unless there was some criminal wrongdoing and all that, it'll blow over. I mean, I don't know that it's the best time to be selling planes to the entire world if it's going into recession, but that's a different issue.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm not current on I haven't paid attention to the details because I knew it wasn't anything I was going to get involved in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we just, like I said, we just, great, it was, and we've explained it on the radio, great company. I've got family that works there. We've got employees that have parents that work there. On a valuation basis, just didn't make sense to us. And we thought the whole, they're using debt to buy back stock, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, let's get on to something that I know that you're interested in and you're watching really closely. Gold markets, gold miners, had some interesting action here in gold, bumped up against that 1350 level and then pulled back with some vengeance. I thought it wasn't looking good there for a while, and then we've seen a bounce back. Where are we at on gold? What are your thoughts? Where do you think we're headed there?
I don't know exactly where we are because it's a market that's hard to have any especially great insight. I'm bullish on the price of gold because I think that the more people over time are going to realize that it's something that you can own that won't be hurt by the insane policies of the central bankers and benefits from those policies. If you don't like what these central bankers are doing, it's hard to do something about it. If you try to own bonds, there's no yield there. All you get is risk.
Right.
And the more you can't really get short, right? Well, maybe it's about time to be able to be short. But so gold is an asset that will benefit from these bad policies and the consequences of the policies and all of the things that have gone on. But most people don't see it that way. Most people believe in the central banks, and that's why the stock market's been as high as it has been. And slowly, maybe as the stock market starts to decline, you'll see more people start to pile on the gold. I think over time it's going to go, quite a bit higher. Exactly how high and when, I don't know. But I think the path of least resistance will be up.
What are your thoughts on the dollar and gold? You may have no interest in this, and if you do, you take a pass. But one of the things that we've been looking at, and we've been having some discussions with some of our guests about, is the idea that the dollar, contrary to what I think a lot of people out there think, that you can have the dollar and gold rallying at the exact same time. If you could chime in, give us your two cents on that, because and I'm sure you're familiar with it, right? But we've got this dollar bear thesis where, over the long run, I'm very much a big dollar bear. But then you've got the argument that if we are going into a global recession because of the dearth of dollar.
Well, look, it's just simple. The policies that we promote here in this country are negative for our currency. The problem is currencies trade relative to each other.
Right.
And as crazy as the Fed is and all that other crap, the BOJ is more insane. The ECB is more insane than the Fed. The BOJ is probably the most reckless. The ECB second by a nose, and the Fed's maybe in third place. The Swiss National Bank, they're crazy. The BOE is. So there's no sense that all the major currencies are all flawed. It's like what color of Monopoly money in the game Monopoly do you want to try to go to the store and use? But on a relative basis, the dollar has done well because it's not as bad as the others. Now, it is benefited by the wrong-headed idea that the Fed would be able to normalize. They won't be. And our budget deficits are going to explode. And then the sheer size of the budget deficit and the size of the debt and these policies may cause the dollar to weaken. I'm no fan of the dollar, but look, you find me a piece of paper that's worth owning. Canadian? No. There aren't any. They're all horrible. Which is the reason why, if you want to own something that's a store of value or a currency, that gets you back to gold. The problem is gold tends to be a little more volatile than the average currency. But none of these currencies are any good. And the reason why the dollar's held on as long as it has is because, we aren't the worst of the central bank policy. We haven't pursued the worst of the central bank policies. However, we are, our debts are quite sizable. So that's the problem, but it doesn't make any difference. Gold can go up even as the dollar goes up against other pieces of colored paper.
Right.
Because, the gold can rally against all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I've just been shocked by this blowback. People talking to you like you're an idiot.
Maybe I am.
Blowback about what?
Oh, about making the argument that, look, the dollar can go, you know, gold and dollar can move up in tandem. They can move separately. But he's like, no, the gold's denominated in U.S. dollars.
Yeah, well, who says that's not true doesn't know anything. Look, you have to understand, literally everyone has opinion about gold. And most people don't know anything.
Right.
They couldn't tell you how much gold is produced in a year. They couldn't tell you how much has been produced over time. They couldn't tell you the market cap of it within $1 trillion. I mean, they don't know anything. They just got an opinion. So what?
Yeah, it's a pet rock, right? Shiny pet rock.
Some people think that.
Yeah. We've got a couple of them sitting on the Federal Reserve Board. Well, this goes into the next question I wanted to ask you, and kind of leads into that perfectly. We're going to be having a little debate on the show with the Vice President of the Federal Reserve of St. Louis and me, and then actually Dave Collum is going to join us for that one too, about MMT, Modern Monetary Theory. It's shocking to me. I laugh and I shake my head. It's not surprising though, when we start down this, this Fed road of QE, you just knew the monetary insanity was just going to keep coming. Have you looked into modern monetary theory at all, other than the fact that it's just another way to print money and, more control? And what are your thoughts on this? Are you surprised? Kind of give us a blow by blow of how you see this whole modern monetary theory fad that's coming around.
Well, it's just another name for debt monetization.
Right.
So, I mean, it's expedient, and in people that don't know anything about financial history or they're going to say, well, gee, why not? And when people think that printing money has no consequences, then the governments run up bigger debts thinking, well, the central bank can pay for it, and monetize it. And all this is, and they're rooting for more. Look, it's just another crazy idea that is being has been promoted as a potential policy along with all the other crazy stuff. So I mean, it's just debt monetization, and one of these days when psychology changes, for whatever reason it changes, none of these options will be available, and we'll have an absolutely brutal recession, and there's going to be all kinds of hell to pay for having done all this stuff this long. But as long as people believe and the thing holds together, it's like a chain letter.
Yeah.
That holds up till it doesn't. And then when it doesn't, it falls apart. Why does it fall apart? Well, psychology changes. Why does it change? Who knows?
Yeah.
Not you can't put your finger on it. So it's just one of those kind of things. They can talk about any crazy thing they want to for the moment. And until something changes, then they can't. But until something changes, they can.
Yeah, I one of the reasons I love having guys like you on that have been doing this for a long time and doing it successfully is because it gives me an opportunity to pick your brain a little bit. When you're running money in an environment like this, one of the things that we're having a really tough time with is obviously we've got to be invested. We're positioned very conservatively right now, and it's value, we know all the problems, we've outlined it and all that kind of stuff. But when you're, when you're managing money like this, which I know you've done for the vast majority of your career, what do you do during times like this? What, I mean, obviously gold is part of all of our clients' portfolios. I'm looking around at so much of this stuff, and yeah, they're good companies. Prices don't make any sense. It's crazy. I feel like we, buying a lot of this stuff is kind of like voluntarily putting a sword of Damocles over your head and just waiting till it drops. What other things are you looking at? Or do you just sit in cash? How do you manage these times?
Well, the Fed, you cannot manage money responsibly. You're not allowed to.
Yeah.
Because here's what happens. You try to manage it responsibly, then the clients fire you. And if you join the herd, then eventually you blow up. So most people have decided, well, if I'm in the money management business and I want to collect fees, I better go along with the crowd because at least I'll be able to keep the assets until something bad goes wrong. And then maybe I can say that nobody else saw it coming and we're all going to be, everyone else is going to go down at the same time, so I won't get fired. That's basically been the default decision that people have made for the most part, in my opinion. And if you've tried to behave somewhat in a somewhat sane fashion, you would have been fired. So if you tried to say, I'm going to own T-bills or short-dated notes and, the odd stock makes sense and gold stocks, then you're probably positioned correctly for what's going to come next. But But you know, the central banks have taken away the ability to ever be prudent. That's just what they've done.
Yeah, yeah. It's been, speaking of firing, I think we've lost like 4 clients or something in the last 7 years. So we're not used to it. A lot of our clients are very loyal, understand the concerns that we have, all that kind of stuff. And we had a couple new clients, over $1 million worth of client accounts, walk out the door in the last month. Both of them had outperformed the S&P over the last year and a half. And it wasn't because we were picking high-flying stocks. It's because we've been very defensive. And they basically said that they thought I was too conservative and this was a great economy and I wasn't making them enough money.
That's exactly what happens in these sorts of environments.
Yeah, it's just brutal. And like you said, you can't be prudent.
Well, listen, if you're the average saver, you've got no choice. The Fed has turned everyone into speculators. I mean, these are the facts. This is what's happened.
Yeah.
And they've forced everyone to become a speculator, either because people feel desperate for some, you know, incremental income or to chase, you know, capital appreciation. And people that are managing other people's money have been either gotten fired because they tried to be prudent, or they joined the party. That's just what happens. That's why things get so warped. And that's why when things break, it's so devastating. But that's where we're headed.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember who said that first, but they said something to the effect of, yeah, being, you can't be prudent, and this market has completely taken the rational approach out of your hands, and you got to speculate. And I was sitting, it reminded me of a client call I was on the other day. A client said, we got to get into more tech stocks. And I said, absolutely not. You know, and it's not that they're all bad or anything, but, you know, in general. Yeah, brutal environment. So just to finish up here, I don't want to take too much of your time, but what are key things that you're focused on right now? Are there certain, obviously, I'm sure you're paying really close attention to the global, you know, economic environment, China. What are your thoughts about what's going on in the world? Are we seeing a transitory drop in growth here? Or do you think that this is going to be more of a systemic issue? What's your read on things out there?
The world economy is slowing down. I think it'll continue to slow down. I mean, I guess they could maybe come up with some sort of miracle in China, but I don't think so. The world's slowing down, and I think growth is going to decelerate, and I think at some point it'll be a problem. But, you know, exactly when, it's kind of hard to say. If the stock market starts to slide, that will compound the issue, because that'll impact psychology and impact people's wealth, which has been part of what's allowed the economy to do well the last group of years. People have benefited from the bubble.
Yeah. Well,
but I think that the world economy is heading into recession, and that's just a fact, I think.
Yeah. No, it's the way it looks like to me. And do you think the way that we've been looking at it is, you know, the old days of the world catching a cold and the United States being fine. I can't see that.
No. That's not possible.
Right.
I've heard that fantasy before. The world economy goes into recession. U.S. is not going to be fine. Period.
Yeah. I can't see that either. Especially when you're looking at a company or a country like, you know, China, that's made up something like, what, 50% of the global growth over the last 10 years, if they're struggling. And you know, I think that's evident in what you see going on in Australia. They're intimately linked. Just see nothing but trouble out there. And yet stock market doesn't seem to care. I mean, we got a bit of a down day today, but boy, the party just keeps rolling. And the Fed seems like they're just completely intent on keeping it that way. So, well, anyway, sir, I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man. I appreciate you taking the time to give us an update. And we're going to keep an eye on things and keep an eye on gold. And hopefully we can get you back on at some point in the future. And when things move or progress, and get your thoughts at that point. But I can't thank you enough for coming on and joining us today.
All righty. Take it easy.
All right, Bill. Have a good one. Bye-bye. All right, you guys, that wraps up the show for the day. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we will see you next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.